Hey everybody, welcome to a special edition of Mindshift Podcast coming out not on a Friday, but on a Sunday. So skip church, of course I'm kidding. Stay home instead and listen to this great conversation that I'm going to be bringing you in just a few minutes with Andy Herndon. I met Andy on social media just a few months ago, and he is part of the ex-evangelical or ex-fundamentalist community. He is working on a very important project. It is called The Ex-Evangelicals, a documentary. And this is a chance for him to get the word out. So I'm really happy to be able to do that about his project, what he wants to do. And we're going to get into his backstory as well within evangelicalism and listen to some of the stuff that he experienced when he was a Bible college student and when he was a pastor in different churches and what's led him to start this amazing project in the first place. Basically, he's trying to raise funds. He's doing a crowdfunding thing right now. And so I'm glad to be getting the word out for Andy and for his project. And we'll be talking about what it's all about in this episode as well, this special edition of Mindshift Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. And as I say, we're going to be talking to Andy Herndon from Ashland, Oregon, about this important work that he's doing. So if you are an ex-evangelical, ex-fundamentalist, ex-evangelical, ex-Christian, whatever you want to label yourself now, if you've walked away from the church, and who knows, perhaps you've even completely jettisoned your entire former Christian faith, then not only will this episode be interesting for you to listen to what Andy is working on, I believe it is super helpful and very empowering for us ex-evangelicals to get our voices out there, to get our stories told. And that's why I do this podcast, and that's why I'm excited to be a part of whatever it is that Andy is going to eventually come out with in his final documentary film. So how can you get a hold of Andy? Well, you can follow him on Twitter at Andy Herndon. You can also get a hold of me if you, for some reason, can't find him. You can follow me at MindShift2018 on Twitter, and I will connect you with Andy myself. You can also find out more by looking up at exvangelicaldoc, both on Twitter and Instagram. And not only find out more about this project that he's working on, but there is a crowdfunding site that you can go to contribute to help defray the expenses that he's going to be incurring as he puts all this stuff together. So I think I've given you enough information as to how to get a hold of myself and Andy. So let's go on into it. My conversation with Andy Herndon, exploring The Ex-Evangelicals, a documentary. All right, I'm here with Andy Herndon, all the way from Ashland, Medford, Oregon, Southern Oregon, really, isn't it? You're almost to California.
Yeah, the next stop is California after Ashland.
Next stop is California, man. But you have no desire to go any further south. Is that what you're saying? You don't want to go to California?
Not really. I originally from Southern California, but the prices for houses are better here. Definitely. Culture here. I work in the film industry, so I'm down there a lot.
Oh, right.
But
so you do get down
every time
there.
I go down there, I'm like, oh, it's so nice here. And then I start driving around. I'm like, oh, I want to go back to Oregon. I love coming here and then leaving. So Oregon's my home.
Oregon's your home, man. Yeah, we lived in Portland for about 13 years. We originally were both from Seattle, me and my wife. So Oregon's a cool place to live. I love Portland. It's really liberal. It's eclectic. It's got a cool vibe to it. I was just down there last weekend, actually, and I thought, you know what? This is pretty cool. I do like Portland.
Yeah, I actually went to Bible college in Portland, so...
Oh, you did. So did I. Yeah,
yes,
I went to Bible college and seminary in Portland. So that's why we moved there from Seattle, and then we just ended up staying. I became a pastor of a church, and the whole story, man, you just go down that road. Next thing you know, you're there 10, 12 years, and like, what the hell, man? What am I doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
So you went to Bible college in Portland, but then what'd you do after that? Were you going full tilt evangelical?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, actually. I grew up semi-evangelical. Both my parents were pastor's kids, but... they kind of got burned by the church, so I kind of went Easters, Christmases, that sort of thing. And then when my parents split, right around when I was 10, 11, the church basically raised me at that point. I really pressed into the church. And for that, I do have the church to thank, because I had some positive adults around me in youth group. Things they were saying, you know, purity culture and things like that weren't great. But it kept me from, you know, getting into some really bad stuff because I didn't really have anyone there as a positive influence.
Those are formative years, really, weren't they? I mean, you're talking, what, teenage kind of years?
Yeah, I was 12, 13, 14, 15. We were in Southern California, and then I actually ended up moving to Las Vegas. Was going to a Southern Baptist mega church in Las Vegas, if you can imagine it.
Sin City,
man. It does exist.
It actually does exist in Sin City. You have a Southern, that doesn't seem right at all, man. A Southern Baptist church in Sin City. I guess if anyone needs the gospel, it's all these people in Sin City. You know, gambling's legal, prostitution's legal. I mean, was that what they were trying to do? Is save all these desperate people?
The Southern Baptist Convention actually did a whole campaign for 3 years called Loving Las Vegas, where they were literally bringing in church planters from the South, from Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and they were planning churches, and their hope was to shut the casinos down.
Are you
that
kidding
obviously
me?
Didn't happen.
Obviously.
That was around 2002, 2003, that was all happening. A lot of those church plants failed because they tried to do a Southern model in Las Vegas, which doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And
not the Bible Belt.
The Southern Baptists actually have a huge presence in Arizona,
really?
Which is fully believable if you understand Arizona. yeah. So it wasn't that hard for them to get resources up into Las Vegas.
Nobody's from Arizona. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's people, all the snowbirds coming in from places like where I'm at right now. I'm in Seattle. People, you know, go down there for the winter, and then I guess they're looking for a church while they're there. So, hey, why not plug in? So, yeah, so you were part of that whole shut down the casino movement in Las Vegas, or was that kind of before your time there?
That was all Las Vegas right about when I was graduating high school. And during high school, I was at a summer camp, youth summer camp, and I had answered the call to go into ministry, and I was like, you know, those emotional things they do.
We all did.
And I stuck with it, and right out of high school, I decided I was asked by another Southern Baptist church that was actually a little smaller to come and do their worship ministry for their youth group. And I did it for a few weeks, but then the youth pastor there actually got caught stealing money from the church.
Embezzling
so
from the church.
They asked me to, can you fill in till we find a youth pastor? I filled in, and then, you know, at that time I'd been in church culture for a while. I learned how to manipulate emotional situations. I did a big old revival night, you know, music and dark lights and like a ton of kids, you know, raised their hands saying they wanted to say a prayer that would keep them out of hell. Yeah, the church thought it was the greatest thing ever, and they hired me as their youth pastor at 19.
So you got the gig at 19. Wow, that's amazing.
At 19. And then from there, I was there at that church for about 2 years, and then I moved up to Reno for about 8 months. I had a worship pastor position there, and it actually fell through, so then I moved back to Vegas. Was a children's and worship pastor at another Southern Baptist church in Las Vegas until I met my wife, who was from Oregon. She was going to my church. We met, and then about 8 months after we got married, I decided that we needed to move to Oregon because that was about 2007 at that point. Things were starting to get bad in Las Vegas as far as the economy was going. And so we moved up to Oregon and started working at a kind of a Calvary Chapel model church as their children's and worship pastor. And all this was part-time. I wasn't getting paid enough, and I decided at that point I was 24, 25, I needed to go to Bible college. So went up to Multnomah Bible College in Portland, and actually was living in Medford and driving up to Portland once a week.
Dude,
for classes for like 48 hours, and I did that for 2 years.
That's a serious commitment.
One reason we couldn't find a place to live in Portland that was cheap, couldn't find jobs that was cheap at the time because the economy was still recovering. And I really thought I was supposed to be at the church I was at, and I was working with youth there. And from there, I graduated Bible college, went to a very conservative, very, very conservative church, Baptist church on the coast of California. The northernmost city in California is called Smith River. It's on the 101. And I was at a church there for 3 years. And I started questioning everything about my faith, about politics. Just because it was so conservative. This little church was in a Hispanic community, but it was a white church. People were traveling from a small city in Oregon and then a small city the south of us in California, because that's what they did. Didn't want to help the community. My wife and I were trying the best we could to engage the Latinx Hispanic community. We did, you know, after school clubs. My wife has a master's degree in education. We were doing tutoring. We were engaging with the school district there and the county and the city. But the rest of the church didn't want anything to do with it. And we were just getting more and more frustrated. In 2012, I remember being grilled by my pastor there because he thought I voted for Obama, which I did. It was the day after the election in 2012, and I was in his office for like 3 hours. He wanted to make sure I didn't vote for Obama. He couldn't actually ask me because that would have been illegal.
Exactly,
but
I
wasn't going to answer him. But
you pled
and then
the
I got in trouble again because at one point I had said that it's a church's responsibility to be all about social justice. And in the Baptist world, social justice is like saying, Hail Satan. So.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, you could pick
so
an
from
abortion
there,
clinic.
I got in a lot of trouble and then left that church to go to what I thought would be a cool non-denominational church back here in Medford. But it was the same thing, just with a different wrapper. And got a lot of trouble there. And then finally, they had forced me to resign. And from there, I'm like, all right, I'm out. I'm done with this. And I actually decided to go into the entertainment industry and go to film school in Ashland. And that's where I'm at now.
So would you say that deconstructing your relationship with the church, that was kind of where your deconstruction started? Because I learned something from David Hayward, the Naked Pastor, and he said that there's two kind of paths. There's deconstructing your relationship with the church, and then there's deconstructing your relationship with your theological beliefs. And for some people, they it's one or the other that eventually kind of impacts both. Similar to me, because I was a pastor, I did that whole thing, and I got burned out on church ministry and Christians, but it was then later that I went back and started really questioning what I actually believed theologically and biblically, and that's kind of where I'm at now. I've done the church piece, I think. That was about 10 years ago. So it sounds like you kind of had a similar path going down the pastoral ministry route and getting burned out and screwed over, like so many people do in that line of work.
Oh, absolutely. The church, that was the catalyst. I mean, I just wanted to serve Jesus and you know, serve people. That was my thing, and the church was always an encumbrance to that. I remember one time, my church on the coast here, this conservative Baptist church, we had a lot of LGBTQ students coming. And at that point, I was very confused about where I stood on that issue. But I let them come. And I was just so excited, you know, as a youth pastor, you know, that LGBTQ students would even feel comfortable coming to our youth group gatherings. And I excitedly told our pastor, and his first question was, they're not going on any of the overnight trips, are they?
Oh, we can't have that.
Like, oh, my gosh, are you
seriously?
They have to sleep separately, or it was stuff like that. And you know, my church, my last church that I was at here, they thought they were cool and hip, but they weren't. A lot of LGBTQ students coming, and they just seemed to keep coming. And the elder board there was really not comfortable with it. They were not comfortable with how I was engaging. And my last year there as a youth pastor, I was really not. I wouldn't say not preaching the gospel, but all the kids I were getting, they were latchkey. They were coming out of situations where their parents were abusing substances, or, you know, all kinds of crazy situations. And so to me, sitting there and just preaching the Bible wasn't going to do any good, just being a positive adult. So I kind of shifted my ministry, just being a positive place and just getting, you know, my leaders, we would work the gospel on one-on-one situations. Didn't like that at all. And so eventually I was kicked out of there. But yeah, as I began to see the church for what it was, I'm like, this, things aren't lining up. And it really wasn't until about, I left or got kicked out. I was forced to resign.
Yeah, you got kicked out of a lot of places, it sounds like.
the last two, yeah, I was. Yeah,
you got the boot, the left foot of fellowship.
I was comfortable.
You rock the boat too much, and then pretty soon there's the door. They're going to show you the door, aren't they? You can't have that, which is so ironic, because if we're really exploring spirituality, isn't that the best place? It's supposed to be a safe place to ask questions
and
express doubts and you know, really tear into things and chew stuff up. And nope, you can't do it, man. I mean, most people come to church to be confirmed in what they already believe, I find. So if you mm-hmm. start pushing that envelope a little bit, yeah, you're going to be shown the door, which is what happened to you, it sounds like, in more than one place.
Oh, yeah. It was a constant refrain in my time in ministry. And so when I left, it was just kind of like, all right, I don't know. At first, I'm like, okay, I have a problem with the church. Had a lot of churches in the area courting me because they knew, like, you know,
you're a free musician, agent,
worship leader. They're trying to get me. I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to stay back from church. And then from that, I just began to explore, what do I really believe? came from a Southern Baptist background. I had very Calvinist, Mark Driscoll leanings for a long time. I almost planted an Acts 29 church in Ashland at one point. You know, I had met Mark Driscoll, hung out with them, that whole Acts 29 crew. And that actually situation was part of my deconstruction, too, because I was such a Mark Driscoll fanboy for so many years that when he had his moral failing, it really rocked me. I'm like, oh, my gosh, the things he's saying is just not right. The things he's doing is just not right. And I put this guy on this pedestal. You know, what is wrong with the church in general?
Well, and the ironic thing is, you know, like 5 minutes later, he's pastoring a mega church in Arizona. No questions
he's
asked.
He's in Scottsdale now, yeah.
You know, and I'm looking at that going, really? I mean, no questions asked. He's a wonderful man of God, and now he's leading another mega church. Really? I mean, so these Christian celebrities, man, it can be an unbelievable thing. Put them up on a pedestal, they fall down, they get right back up there on another pedestal. This is the culture that we're talking about.
You see it time and time again. I just started exploring other things, and then I got to the point where I was like, you know, I don't know what I believe. I like Jesus. I like Christian expressions of spirituality, but, you know, I start reading some Rob Bell. I'm like, I like what he's saying, but, you know, so I kind of got to the point where I was like, I'm definitely not Orthodox evangelical anymore. I would consider myself currently kind of a universalist who expresses his spirituality through Protestant, not evangelical, more Protestant Christian expressions. I'm currently attending a UCC church, which is welcoming and affirming to trans people, LGBTQ, all races. You know, they have a rainbow flag and a Black Lives Matter flag in the front every Sunday. I love it.
Right. You're not going to find that in the Southern Baptist Church.
You're not going to find that there. The LGBTQ issue I talked about with you, that was also another big thing for me, because I had gotten to know these students and they felt safe coming to my youth group, but they didn't feel safe coming Sunday mornings, which was a huge problem.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't feel
safe for them coming Sunday mornings, because I mean, some of them were very open about their sexuality. I knew that it would be a problem with the churches that I was working at. So that was also a huge catalyst for me to disconnect there. Like, okay, you're saying you love everybody, but it's always like, oh, we love gay people, but, you know, we love them, but, you know.
I think there's a lot of disingenuousness going on there, because when I was down in Portland the other week, I met with a friend of mine, and we were both pastors at the same time when our church went through a mess. We had to close it down, and we lived through that experience, and haven't seen him in 10 years. But he's going to a church now in Portland, and he said, yes, it's welcoming in the sense that if you say I'm gay, they'll let you come in the door, and they won't discriminate against you. But he says the critical piece is they want you to get saved, and then you'll become straight. That's the disingenuous part. So he says, if you really push it a little bit, they'll say, oh, absolutely, we're inclusive. No, you're not. Not at all. I mean, so yeah, you gotta look a little bit more carefully into these things.
Yeah, they want you to pray. They want them to pray the gay away, which just, you know,
exactly,
time after time, study exercise, it just doesn't work. So
yeah, so getting saved will do that for you.
I'm at Southern Oregon University, which is an extremely liberal school. It was actually voted by Advocate Magazine as one of the top 10 universities for LGBTQ students.
Oh, right. So slightly different than Multnomah.
Very different from what I'm
just
used to
a little
from Bible college.
Yeah.
Getting a second bachelor's degree in digital cinema, and I'm also working in the film industry. I'm working developing a reality show with some producers from L.A., doing a lot of freelance work, and just kind of going full-fledged into the world of the entertainment industry and movies and TV and online media.
Now, that makes a great segue to talk about your current project, this Exvangelical Doc. It's the hashtag Exvangelical Doc, if people want to look it up. What is this about? This is something that we obviously need to talk about, because I'm very interested to somehow be a part of it. If nothing else, just help get the word out there. Can you tell us about what it's about, what was the impetus behind it, and what you hope to do with it?
I love telling stories through film. I've done a few shorts. I did one called Paradigm Shift, which I've submitted to some film festivals about my experience, kind of changing my mind about LGBTQ issues and other things. And I'm going through the film program at my school at SOU very quickly, because I had all my gen ed stuff done. Because luckily, my Bible college, unlike a lot of people I've known in ministry, my Bible college was accredited. So all my gen ed stuff transferred over to SOU because it's also in Oregon. So I was lucky. So So all I'm doing is taking film classes. So I'm going to be done really quick. I'm going through this program a lot faster than I originally than it was designed to go through. So for me to graduate, only classes that were available my last two terms were all these documentary classes, advanced documentary, documentary location shooting, all this stuff. And my advisor's like, you want to graduate, you have to take these classes or we'll wait another year. It's like, I know you're more of a narrative, you know, scripted guy. And I'm like, well, I just want to get done. Let's do it.
Let's get it.
Like, well, for your capstone, why don't you consider doing a documentary? I'm like, okay. And that documentary for my capstone, I'm thinking like short form documentary, whatever. I'm thinking through it. And I'm like, okay, well, what if I do one on the extra-evangelical community? And at this point, I'm thinking small scale. I'll do some Skype interviews with like Christopher Stroop and some other people, and I'll just kind of tell the story, and it'll be short, and you know, it'll be good for my capstone. So I put the idea out there. Chris Stroop from, you know, Exvangelical hashtag Empty the Pews, he retweeted it, and then it just blew up. Like,
yeah, it just exploded.
Everyone's retweeting it, and it's just an idea. I'm like, hey, what would it look like if I did this?
Yeah, I remember
and
when
people
it came
are like,
out.
Hey, can we give you money? So at this point, I actually have one of my professors contact me because he follows me and Christopher Stroop on Twitter. He's like, hey, let's meet. He's also a documentary filmmaker and a producer. Let's meet. Let's talk. My wife's a crowdfunding specialist, so we meet, and I meet with a few other producers. And like, you have a backing here from the ex-evangelical community, which is amazing. You have the resources there. You have a story ready. Why don't you, you know, consider doing a full-length documentary that will go to film festivals and maybe art house theaters and will also act as a part of your capstone for graduation? So from there, I decided, all right, we're going to do a full-length, you know, straight-up, high-quality, feature-length documentary called The Exvangelicals. We're going to be talking about the exvangelical community, how it happened, why it happened, who are they, what are we doing now? So it kind of came out of nowhere, fell in my lap, and we're crowdfunding now to get this thing off the ground.
Well, it's been kind of an organic thing then, hasn't it, the way it's just sort of blown up and gone. It hasn't quite gone viral yet, maybe, would you say, but that'd be cool if it did when you get it out there. It's something that's actually going to happen now. So where are you at in the process? How far along you've kind of gone down that route and said, okay, this is a thing now. This is really looks like it's going to happen. What's the next step?
Oh, right now I have pitch pieces done. I've talked to some producers, and we're getting the word out there. We're defining what the narrative is going to look like, because even though it is a documentary, you still have to do some writing to create a narrative arc. And so what is that going to look like? Who are we interviewing? And we're crowdfunding right now. So it's kind of a process of writing and crowdfunding and getting the word out there and adjusting. And with documentary filmmaking, you have to be really loose because you never know where the story might take you. It might take you somewhere you weren't expecting. You need to go follow that.
Yeah,
that
just
branch there and let it go where it takes you.
Yeah.
So we're in that phase. We're getting to, I'm talking with a lot of people have contacted me about working on the film, working for free, which I don't want to do. I want to pay everybody who's on this film. You know, crew, I'm talking with potential writers and producers to help get this off the ground. Big focus right now is getting all the pitch stuff ready to get to distributors and to producers, be able to hand them a press packet, what this film would look like if they want to back it, and then just raising the funds and having that buzz, because if a distributor or a producer sees there's already buzz, they definitely want to get on board. So just kind of get everything tackled together, and then hopefully by the first of the year, start just filming, traveling different places. I know Portland and Seattle are two places I am definitely going to be going to. A lot of people from Mars Hill actually came and approached me. They'd like to be a part, and that's the narrative I want to follow a little bit, is what happened at Mars Hill in Seattle. And yeah, it's kind of all just happening at once. And I have a lot of great people around me, though, who've done it before, and they know what they're doing, and they're kind of guiding me along.
You're not just going it alone. It sounds like you've got some good help, a good community around you that's going to kind of steer you in some good directions. You're looking to start filming sometime January, somewhere in the first of the year. Are you looking to have people contact you that want to be a part of the film, or are you going to contact people that you kind of strategically are targeting to be on it?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah, a little of both.
It's been pretty amazing as I put this out there. People just started emailing me their stories. I'm reading these stories like, oh my gosh, horrible, terrible things that have happened to people in the LGBTQ community, women, trans people. Reading the stories of how they were treated and mistreated and abused and molested from the church. And they're like, I want to put my story out there. If you want to interview me, I'm open to it. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And all I can email back is, I am so sorry this happened to you. Thank you for contacting me. So, and there's a lot of stories out there. And so I'm just kind of trying to filter through it. But I still would very much welcome people. You know, if you've got a story you want to tell, I definitely want to hear it. So much so that I'm realizing that I'm not going to be able to talk about a story in a full-length documentary. I don't have, 6 hours. You know, this can't be like a Marvel Cinematic Universe thing where we have 28 movies. So I'm thinking maybe even afterwards we get a YouTube channel up and going, and we're just telling people stories that way. We're putting stories out there as kind of a follow-up, so people have that outlet. You know, they can tell their truth and put it out in the world, and it can be produced well and put in a platform where people are going to see it.
It's very important, isn't it, to tell your story, as you say, because, I mean, one of the things I found, I started a group on Facebook, it's called the Post-Evangelical Writers Group, a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, and got a huge response. Same kind of thing what you're doing. We've pitched a book, like a collaborative book project, that is the same kind of thing where everyone's contributing a chapter to it and telling their stories. It's about life after evangelicalism, sort of the reconstruction after deconstruction piece, but you get the same kind of thing, just some absolutely horrific stories. And I find that's true. Those two communities, women and LGBTQ, are kind of predominant in the ex-evangelical community. I don't know why that is. I mean, obviously it's because they've been screwed over so in so many horrific ways by the church, but it's just, I look at that and I think, my God, where's the love of God in all this? I still don't understand how they can't see that disconnect. I mean, do they think they're doing the right thing by being so horrible to these two communities of people? It just staggers the mind. I can't kind of get my head around it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same way. It's time after time. It's funny because I don't hear a whole lot of stories from angry white guys, though there's a lot of, like myself, angry straight white guy here, I'm there. But I also have to recognize I do come from a place of privilege. I grew up in a Protestant background, white, straight, evangelical. So one huge narrative I want to push here is making sure that everyone is represented, that we have people of color, we have, LGBTQ, we have women who are really able to get their narratives out there. And the spotlight's there, and make sure that people understand the ex-evangelical and the ex-evangelical community is so diverse. People of every race, every orientation, every gender, we've all been hurt by it. And then also just flip it and show, what are we doing now? What are we doing now to make positive change? How are we as a community being creative and making a difference in the world, serving the poor, helping the less fortunate, helping heal those who are hurting, especially from, evangelicalism in and of itself. So
the reconstruction piece, that's something I've kind of been focusing on the last few months in more and more detail, thinking, okay, how can we move past this? Because living in the anger and the bitterness, that's a phase that you got to go through, I'm sure. And I went through it, and you probably went through it. You're looking at your losses, and we both invested a tremendous amount of time and money. I mean, you were driving 4 hours each way or whatever just to go to Portland. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a huge investment to get this degree. And then you serve the church, and then it just kind of blows up in your face. And there's a lot of investment that's, you go, man, what the hell? What do I have to show for the last 10, 15, 20 years and all the money I spent, so you got to go through that though, but you can't live there forever. I've found you can, it's a very unhealthy place. So it's important, as you say, to get the next sort of what next, what happens after the deconstruction, because it's a whole new identity. You got to form a whole new identity,
Oh yeah. And that's a big thing. I mean, for myself, I've actually started going to counseling because my identity for so long was wrapped up in the church. From age 12, the church essentially raised me. It was in those formative years, they brought me up, and then here I am, 35. It's like a parent died.
Yeah, it's like a divorce. It's true.
And so I've had to work through that, the sense of loss and of a parent, and also just the sense of loss of identity. Who am I now? In high school, I was the president of the Bible club my last 2 years of high school. They knew me as Andy the Bible Boy.
That's who I was.
And now it's like, who am I? Like, what the hell?
You're not Andy the Bible Boy anymore. You might be deconstructing it, but deconstructing the Bible. So how much money do you need to raise? This is the other question. And also, how can people get a hold of you if they're saying, hey, this sounds really cool, I want to be a part of it, if nothing else, just to support Andy financially? What's the best ways to get a hold of you? I know you're active on Instagram, Twitter. What are the best platforms?
Best platforms are our Instagram and Twitter. You get a hold of me at Andy Herndon on either of those, or at Exvangelical Doc on either one of those for the actual documentary. As far as the crowdfunding goes, we're raising $10,000 as just an initial crowdfunding campaign. That's going to allow us to get a little bit more gear we need, to hire a few people to help produce, so we're not stiffing people. And also travel costs, places we need to go are Portland, Seattle, Indianapolis, Nashville, Atlanta. That's not cheap. And just be able to start getting the footage and getting it together. End of the summer, or at the beginning of the summer, or midsummer, we're going to do one more Kickstarter campaign to really get things. It'll be an actual Kickstarter to get things in the post-production going, the editing, getting distribution out there, and get this into film festivals, into art house theaters, and really push it out there. But this initial $10,000 is just to kind of get the ball rolling, get us out there, get things filming. We're going to do it as cheaply as possible. I just bought some used gear, but high-quality gear. Just try to save as much money, be as responsible with the funds that have been given to us to get this thing going. And you can help with that. Just go to GoFundMe.com/TheExvangelicals and go there and give. And anyone who gives to that one will get, first screenings. They'll get updates that the rest of the people in this Twitter and Instagram sphere won't get. And we're hoping to have some rewards once the pre-production is done and we're actually in a production for people who have given. And there's no end cap on that. We're hoping to have that all by the end of the year, by December 31st. And then starting in June, we'll do an actual 30-day Kickstarter campaign. We'll get all our post-production funds ready and really pushed hard to get it out to the public.
It sounds like an amazing project. I mean, I would definitely love to be a part of it. I'm glad to be able to get the word out just through this podcast. And I don't know how else, other than giving money to your project, that would be super cool to be somehow a part of it. And if nothing else, the networking is critically important, isn't it, in that community?
Oh, absolutely.
You got people all over the world. I mean, I'm coming in from the UK. I've been bouncing back and forth to Seattle. So it's been really cool to talk to people while I'm here on the ground, because there are a lot of ex-evangelicals in Europe, so there's a lot of people all over the world, really. I've got people in Taiwan, Australia, South Africa, different parts of the world. So if you're prepared to travel, you can go all over the world, man. You'll find us everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and if you can't give, I totally understand. I mean, I've had people approach me, hey, I'm a videographer, I'm a cinematographer in this city, if you need anything, if you're here, I'm all help. If you work in the film industry, or you have contacts in the film industry, that's a great contact me. Let me know. That's a great way. If you have something you can offer there. Had a web developer contact me the other day. He's going to be building theexvangelicals.com. He's been building that site for me, and I'm trying to pay him. He won't let me pay him. He wants to do it for free, which is great. I'm still going to pay him somehow.
Got to throw him a bone at least.
If you have airline miles, you're like, I'm not going to use these, or I want to give these up. That's helpful. We'll take whatever you can give to be a part, because this is about this community of ex-evangelicals, of ex-evangelicals, ex-fundamentalists coming together and telling our story, telling our truth. Whether you're an atheist now, or you're like me, kind of a universalist progressive Christian, we have a story to tell. Let's get it out there.
It's an important project. We definitely need to do a lot, whatever we can do to help you get it up off the ground and going. So, and I like what you said. There's a lot of different possibilities for helping that are not just limited to giving cash money. So I like that idea that people might think, well, I don't have any money, I'm flat broke, but they might know somebody or have equipment like you're saying, anything can actually help. So that's the best thing, isn't it? Get a hold of you and then find out what they can do to help. So
just to retweet, I had someone retweet it, and someone else found it, and that person gave $500. It came from a retweet. Like,
that's cool.
Anything.
Even
anything
a retweet.
You never know that retweet. That sounds very evangelical. You never know that one person. But you never know. That one retweet might get to the right person, and they'll see it, and they might be a big producer, or they might have airline miles, or they might be a cinematographer in a city I need to go to, or they might have extra funds. You never know.
You never know. Maybe Jeff Bezos will see it and throw you $1 million. That's just chump change to him, or Bill Gates or somebody like that. You never know, man. The power of social media is unbelievable, isn't it? One little retweet could just go explode, couldn't it? So you literally never know. It's simple, even as simple as a retweet. Yeah. Now, we can all do that. We can all hit that retweet and send your message out to all over the world. So cool. Thank you so much. I know. Now, you're getting ready to go to a Shakespeare festival in Ashland, Oregon.
Yes.
And I'm going to an ex-evangelical get-together. In fact, so this is cool because when we're going to go have dinner tonight. Some of us have met a few times here in Seattle. So this is something I'm going to be talking about, this conversation that you and I have had. So I'm doing one little thing here in Seattle to help get the word out. So
yes, and thank you so much for doing that. Every conversation you have, it gets the word out. People are familiar with it. You know, the more people hear and they see it, the more they're like, you know what, this is legit and I want to be on board with it. So it's thank legit. You so much, Glenn. I appreciate
it. Yeah. Thanks, Andy. I know you got to get going to your Shakespeare festival, and I'm heading off to dinner, so people can get a hold of you at Andy Herndon. That's the best way, isn't it? Either on Instagram or Twitter, or look for the Ex-Evangelical Doc, and then you can figure out if you can give money or any other thing. Just get a hold of Andy, and you can go from there. So cool. Thank you, Andy, for being on Mindshift Podcast. This has been a great conversation. Glad to get to know you a little bit. I mean, we've been bouncing back and forth on Instagram for like a month trying to get this thing done. And we finally got a time where you could meet and I could meet and sit down and do it. So I'm super happy that we finally got it together.
Thank you so much, Glenn. I am too. I really appreciate you taking the time to bring me on your show.
Not a problem. And I will be speaking to you soon. I'm sure we'll stay in touch as this project develops. We'll be, you know, keeping people appraised of what you're doing or anything that you need. Let me know and we can put the word out. And maybe, who knows, that one person might have just exactly what you need. You never know.
Yep. You never know. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Andy. And I will be speaking to you soon. Take care, man.
You too.